You're listening to Life Jacket, your literary buoyancy aid from Artful Scribe. I'm your host, Antoš Vujčík. The following program discusses racial prejudice faced by young people in the UK. Episode 4, Relearning My Name. If you name the thing, it becomes real. It gains meaning, or so some of our theories on language and semantics propose. As someone who lives in a place with some adversity to a name such as mine, I stand in the tension of having an anglicised, yet overtly Polish-sounding name. Antoš. A-N-T-O-S-H. It should read as A-N-T-O-S, with an acute accent over the S. My parents, unsure how to spell Antoš, but wanting to carry on some semblance of Polish identity, wrote my name down as Anthony on the birth certificate, yet introduced me to everyone as Antoš and called me Antoš. In all official correspondence, I am addressed Anthony. Anthony has bills to pay, an ever-dwindling bank balance, a new phone contract. But Antoš, who was made real by being called so, somehow became a writer and plays around in the imagination for a humble living. It's strange having a more real self, and a self that's officiated. I'll have to merge them properly one day, probably. Today's Life Jacket concerns names, or the act of naming the things that happen to you. It's a reflective moment to take in the relationship to that word that you, or others, call yourself. Stay buoyant. This episode is an interrogation of some difficult matters. What's in a name? According to No Violet Bulawayo, author of We Need New Names, the name is the story. She wrote her seminal work driven by the need for, quote, new ways of imagining our identities, of seeing the world and our future. This notion is central to Badal Zaidi and Cassie Wicks' audio documentary, Relearning My Name, where a host of young voices grapple with systemic and social issues. It's an expression of solidarity, hope, and future-making. Relearning My Name is an audio docudrama which combines dramatic monologues with real interview extracts to show the racial prejudices faced by students of South Asian descent in the UK school system. The listener meets the narrator at her crisis point, her identity erased and suppressed as the school system forces her to assimilate. Her monologue conveys the impact of the prejudices she faces in school that have led up to this point of crisis, from microaggressions to overt acts of racism in the classroom. We hear what the personal and generational costs of this are, and of her heritage, the sacrifices made to attain her family's place in Britain. As she realises there is no degree of self-erasure or assimilation that would be enough to be accepted, it's in this discovery that she has a radical vision of bold existence, of telling her story loud, and finding allyship in both those who share this experience and those who are willing to make change. The monologue is punctuated by soundscapes consisting of quotes taken from interviews with school students and teachers on the topic of racial prejudice. The soundscapes contextualise the prejudices of the narrator's story and give hope for the changes that can and are happening in the system. With Relearning My Name, Zaidi and Wicks establish themselves as a creative duo prepared to take on the systems we live in and re-envision the world.
My name is Amna.
My name is Luke.
My name is Rashika.
My name is Sharanya.
My name is Izzah.
My name is Yusuf.
My name is Aisha.
My name is Shehernaz.
My name is Batul.
My name. I am always afraid of speaking my name. I remember my parents telling me to be loud and clear. Be proud, they said. You're different.
So I put my hand up every single time, and he just kind of ignore me and just kind of pick someone.
I'm always going to have that problem where teachers don't say my name, and they, like, kind of just give up trying to pronounce my name right.
There's this idea that, like, white is the default.
As a teacher, we should be really aware of our kind of thing, that we've got these young minds in front of us.
It's kind of just more a vibe you kind of get from the teacher, that they don't like you, and obviously yeah. You can't exactly, like, pinpoint that, but it is something that, like, as it happens, like, over a year, it does, like, dishearten you.
There's always something off in lessons. The ringing chord of an off-tune piano. The pitch just a little bit out. It's barely detectable. But I hear it. When my teacher reaches my name on the register, his eyes flick to me, briefly falling on my face. He prods at my name, like a child finding a dead animal in the playground, poking at it with a stick. I can see his discomfort, a shift in his posture as he looks at me for that split second before he smiles widely at the rest of his students.
I think we have to admit that our stuff body is pretty white, pretty English. It's not hugely diverse.
People who have, like, immigrant parents or, like, are immigrant feel less confident in school, like my personal experience. I feel like then they shouldn't be as popular, if that makes sense.
I feel as if I'm not allowed to be proud of my heritage like my friends are proud of theirs.
Even though we've come so far on so many issues, there's still a long way to go.
I remember the loving hand of my grandmother as she tucked the hair behind my ear. She says to me, "Jani, I'm grateful. I'm so happy." There was pain behind her smiles and exhaustion in her eyes. She could never tell me what she left behind for a better life. How she hunched over her work, hours and hours into the night, the sewing needle shaking in her hands. She could never tell me how people spat at her on the streets and called her Paki. Paki. My grandmother could never tell me how she yearned to be home with her family. She cooked her country's food and wore her country's clothes so she could heal the hole in her heart. But when I look into her tired face, in her soft eyes, I can see that hole has already swallowed her up.
Monkey many a time.
He was like, "Oh yeah, I know all about your culture, man. My dad loves chicken tikka masala."
And then they were like, "Who's most likely to look like a potato?"
I was 12 at the time, but I just giggled. I thought it was funny.
It's just how it is.
Oh, Britain would be so much better without immigrants.
So I was like, "Oh, you know what about me? Like, my family moved from Pakistan to, like, Europe and then England." And she was like, "Oh, well, not you, you're okay."
I hate it when they come over from there, can't steal our jobs, steal our benefits. It's like, they can't do both.
I remember proudly putting on my hijab because of my grandmother's stories. Then walking into school, I saw my friend's eyes narrow in suspicion, a look of disgust flitting across her face. I was followed by the side glances of people as I walked through the corridor, their whispered thoughts, their silent presumptions. Waiting outside the classroom, people started touching my headscarf, and classmates asking me, "What have you got under there? A bomb?" Weeks passed. I remember coming home one day and taking off my headscarf, telling my parents, "I can't do this anymore." I saw their relieved faces. They told me, "It's fine. It's okay." They were terrified of how the world was treating me. And now my friends are telling me, "Wow, I love your hair. And you You look so much prettier. I smile and look pleased, wearing my hair down and skirt up. It's easier to become one of them. To become someone who is not me. Parts of me protest that this is nothing, that this must be normal.
I think there are things that are kind of blatantly racist, and then things could go under the surface if you weren't paying attention. And I think it's important to address them.
At my school, it feels like all they care about is reputation, and mine isn't right enough. Isn't white enough. Must I give up my headscarf, my identity, the culture of my parents and grandparents? Should I dye my hair blonde too? Change my name? Bleach my skin? I won't cry when teachers dismiss me again and again. To them, I can never belong here. I hear whispers from my classmates that I should go back to my country. But if I can't belong here, then where do I belong?
There's a lot of posts going around and awareness being raised of like, what is racism, what is prejudice? And I actually had like friends come back to me and like say, oh, like, sorry that I said this, I'm sorry that I made this comment, because they realized that what they said might have been hurtful to me.
People tend to discount the younger generation, but I feel like we're really learning to become social advocates in a way.
The fact that the school really do recognise that we can't just be kind of hoping for the best, we have to be active.
Teaching the teachers the cultural values, traditions and religious practices that students might have, so that when the students come to them, they can kind of consider that perspective. I guess it's kind of like creating the system in which we'll have an all-inclusive society in schools. Imagine the impact that this could create in our future.
One day, things will change. If teachers learn to pronounce the simple syllables that make up my name, if my friends don't stare at me with burning eyes when I tell them about where I'm from, if instead they want to learn about my experiences, the differences in my world to theirs, maybe then I'll put my hijab back on and show them who I am. I could reach out with my pain. As my hand stretches out, another would grab mine. She wouldn't have the same pain or suffering on her hand, but it's soft with kindness, and she'd tell me, I understand, I feel you. Then another hand grabs mine, then another. Soon there are so many hands latched onto me, and when I look up, I can see their smiling faces. People of all backgrounds are coming together, those who share our pain and those who have never gone through what we have. I can feel all of their empathy, their experiences, and their love flooding into me. And now I'm screaming and shouting, and I will tell the world what we have been through. Maybe one day I will relearn my name.
I had the privilege of working with Batul Sadie and Cassie Wicks on Relearning My Name throughout the pandemic. The pair worked tirelessly together whilst juggling their GCSEs to find the voices and interviews to compose this powerful documentary. I was inspired by their solidarity, vision and courage in tackling such a subject. As young writers, their depth of inquiry is exactly what we need in the world, and it's a privilege to add this documentary to our ever-growing life jacket.
Relearning My Name was written and directed by Batul Zaidee and Cassie Wicks. Batul Zaidee is an advocate for anti-racism, environmental justice and intersectionality, now studying a Master's in Education and International Development at UCL. She hopes to reimagine education for a just and sustainable future. She experienced racial microaggressions and prejudice during her schooling years, which motivated this audio docudrama. Cassie Wicks is an emerging scriptwriter interested in plays, musical theatre, radio, film, TV, and interactive fiction. Her work blends sharply ironic wit with authentically sincere heart. Her credits include the musical comedy Professor Ware, 2024, the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, and the radio docudrama Relearning My Name, 2021, BBC New Creatives, finally being released through Life Jacket. Her short film, Learning in Lockdown, was featured in Southampton Film Week Festival 2020. Cassie is undertaking an MA in Writing for Stage and Broadcast Media from the Royal Centre of School and Speech and Drama, where she is developing a feature film. More information can be found at her website, cassiewicks.com. Batul and Cassie carried out the recording of the contributor interviews, their friends, and the members of staff at Clifton College. Thank you to Clifton College for agreeing to contribute to these sensitive discussions on diversity. The narrator was performed by Summer Khan. Relearning My Name was part recorded by Artful Scribe. Sound design and music was by Antosh Vujcic, that's me. The audio was mixed and mastered by Andy Halliday. Relearning My Name was initially commissioned by BBC Arts and produced by Artful Scribe. Executive produced by Jeremy Routledge at Calling the Shot. Life Jacket is produced by Artful Scribe, a not-for-profit writer development agency based in Southampton, supporting emerging and continuing writers in Hampshire, Dorset, and the Solent region. Artful Scribe is supported by Arts Council England. I'm your host, Antosh Vujcic. This is Life Jacket. Stay buoyant.